This has been quite a conference. We've gone from first sound, and I wouldn't call this last sound, but it is the last session of the conference. I would venture a guess that most of us are in this field and in this hall today due to an early positive sonic event, usually the sounds of the 1960s. With us today, we have a fabulous quartet, even though they're not on the stage right now.
It's doo-wop.
Doo-wop, or... well, there's four of you. It's a quartet that will guide us through the bands, the history, the put it locally on the map, tell us what bands were around here, and the beat of the 1960s. First, we have Richie Underberger, who's written some fabulous books and will happen to be around to sign some afterwards. Richie's the author of the unreleased Beatles, Film and Music, Turn, 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 the 60s Folk Rock Revolution, 8 Miles High, Folk Rock's Flight from Haight-Ashbury to Woodstock, Unknown Legends of Rock and Roll, and Urban Spacemen and Wayfaring Strangers. Due to come out in the spring of 2009 is a huge 300,000-word chronological overview of the career of the Velvet Underground. Ladies and gentlemen, Richie Underberger.
A lot of what has been discussed at this conference the last couple of days is commercially released discs, or certainly interview discs or transcription discs that are relatively accessible to the public. I've always thought as a rock historian that it's also very interesting and very important to also take into account the unreleased music of major artists. And you might be thinking, I've heard a lot of Beatles music. How much unreleased Beatles music can there possibly be? How much Beatles music can there be that I haven't heard yet? It filled up this whole book, but to give you a more concrete example, in January 1969, how many hours of unreleased Beatles music has already circulated by some nefarious means or another? 100 hours. That's just from that month alone. Now, that's an exceptional month because they were filming Let It Be, and the film cameras, which had pretty good sound equipment, were capturing almost everything that they did. But throughout their whole career, there are very interesting live recordings, demos, home recordings where they're composing the songs, recordings for the BBC. Even though a couple discs have been released, there are 8 more CDs worth which have not come out yet. I thought it was very important to write about them in book form, but also in a form that I hope is fun to read and tells you some things about the Beatles you might not be able to find out from standard histories of the band. And in our half hour today, I'm going to play you a few examples of music that I cover in the book and everybody's part that they like the best. I'm going to show you some film clips of the Beatles performing, which have not circulated commercially. We're going to start with a very early recording of the Beatles, and I'll be interested to find out after it's finished how many of you have heard this before.
Each time I look into your eyes, I see that there heaven lies. And as I look, I see the love of love. Someday they'll see that from the start, my place has been deep in your heart. And in your heart, I see the love of love. I will say more and more, now that I'm really sure you love me. say how you love me. So let it rain, I'll never care. Deep in your heart, I'll still be there. And when I'm there, I see the love of the loved. I see the love of the loved. I see the love.
How many people have heard that recording before? I know you have. not so many people. This was performed at their audition for Decca Records on January 1st, 1962. It's a Lennon McCartney song that the Beatles never put out. They didn't even put it out on those anthology discs of previously unreleased material that came out about 10 years ago. It's a song called Love of the Loved, and Paul McCartney's on lead vocals. Aside from the fact it's kind of a neat song and it's interesting to hear them at such an early part of their career, here are just a few things that I point out in the book, which I hope I'm bringing to light when I analyze all of their many unreleased recordings. Doesn't it sound to you like Paul McCartney is maybe imitating Elvis Presley?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, see, everybody says that. And it's only a year or so before the recording of their first album. By that time, the influence of Elvis Presley, at least the blatant influence, was totally gone. He had found his own voice. Did the Beatles pass or fail this audition? Probably most of you know that they failed this audition with Decca Records. They were brokenhearted because there were only four major labels in Britain at that time. They thought that they had blown their big break. I think it's the biggest break they ever got. Why? Because if they had passed, they would have not been produced by George Martin, who was the best possible producer for the Beatles. Also, who's drumming on that track? It's not Ringo, it's Pete Best. And them failing the audition, it sounds kind of cruel, but it gave them a little more time to think, maybe we need a better drummer. And they got Ringo in the band in August, 7 months later, just before they did their Love Me Do single. I think that was the best decision that they ever made, because he's a much better drummer, but also a much better fit as a personality for the group. And also, that year wait between the 15 songs we hear on that audition tape and their first album, it gave John Lennon and Paul McCartney time to write better songs than the one we just heard. I actually kind of like that song, but it's not on the level of I Saw Her Standing There or Please Please Me, Do You Want to Know the Secret, all those great songs that they were already writing by their first album. And they gave Love of the Love, the song we heard, away to a friend of theirs who was also managed by Brian Epstein, Cilla Black. It became their first single. John and Paul would give away a bunch of the songs the Beatles weren't going to use. We're going to hear one now, but I bet you haven't heard this version because it's the Beatles.
If you ever leave me, I'll be sad and blue. Don't you ever leave me, I'm so in love with you. Birds in the sky would be sad and lonely if they knew that I lost my one and only, they'd be sad. If you're bad to me, leaves on the trees would be softly sighing and they heard from the breeze that you left me crying, they'd be sad. Don't be bad to me, but I know you won't leave me.
Enough to be listening to the radio in 1964, you probably remember that song because it was a top 10 hit for Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas. This is the Beatles. It's probably just John and Paul, I think, actually. It's a publishing demo of the song from 1963. I don't think I, it's finally, it's nice to be finally talking to, preaching to the converted. I don't have to convince anybody here how important it is to archive this kind of stuff, these publishing demos that John and Paul just threw out there, never listened to it again, never thought in 45 years 50 people would be dissecting it in a lecture hall in Stanford University. But it's very important historical stuff. A lot of these publishing demos are probably lost forever. Of the Beatles and many other rock and roll artists, I really wish there had been a more conscientious effort to preserve them. And if we find them these days, I think it's important to make sure that they're preserved and also heard. And this song as well was given away to Billy J. Kramer, like I said, who was also managed by Brian Epstein. It was kind of like keeping it in the family. Now, as we know from being involved in the kind of research that we do, there are a lot of recordings where the fidelity isn't very good, but they're of great historical importance. I'm going to play another one of the Beatles where the sound quality isn't so good, but it's a very important event, and I'll tell you what it is after it finishes.
We'd like to say that it's been wonderful for being here in this wonderful Seattle. Sorry about the weather. And we'd like to ask you to join in and clap, sing, talk.
Thanks. Go on.
Do anything. Anyway, the song is good enough.
Beatles doing Long Tall Sally live. It's a very raw recording, but what was this specific recording? It was their last live performance ever, and the last song they ever played on stage before an audience ever, very close to here at Candlestick Park in San Francisco, August 29th, 1966. Paul McCartney asked one of their PR guys to record the concert, but in those days, cassettes were only a half hour aside. And the Beatles were joking among themselves a lot because they knew it was going to be their last show, probably, and the cassette ran out. That's why we don't have the whole song of Long Tall Sally. But you can hear it from the way that Paul McCartney's singing it. He's singing it as if he knows it's the last time he'll be doing that song in front of people on stage. One more recording before we get to the film part. I'm only going to play part of it because I want to make sure that everyone else has their allotted time. There are a lot of alternate versions of songs that the Beatles did, and you might think, why do I need to hear 10 or 12 versions of Twist and Shout or From Me to You? Some of them are very different and in very interesting ways, even though, again, the fidelity might not be perfect. You'll all know this song, but probably a lot of you haven't heard this version.
Wait a second.
Tell me that it's evolution.
Curious, we all know what song that is. How many of you have heard that version, that performance before?
Oh,
a few, about five people. Well, there were a couple other different ones. That was recorded at George Harrison's home in May 1968, just before the Beatles went in to record the White Album. They did 27 home recordings. Eight of them actually are available on the Anthology 3 disc commercially in better fidelity than we just heard. I really wish they would put out all 27, because you hear early working versions of these songs that would change a lot in the studio. I like that example because even though it's a great song and they did two great studio versions, this is different because it's almost like the Beatles are sitting around a campfire playing a folk song, just playing for the joy of playing for themselves. And in that very brief bit, just before I cut off, you hear those harmonies. It has almost like a Beach Boys influence, which you don't hear so much in the single. If someone asked me what Beatles album should come out of unreleased material that hasn't been out yet, I would say find those 27 songs in better fidelity and put them out, because they're very historically important, but again, they're very fun to hear. I think that's the bottom line. I also cover a lot of uncommercially available film footage of the Beatles performing in my book. It's maybe about a quarter of the book. And again, we don't have time. I could show you hours and hours, but I'm going to show you a couple clips. You might think you've seen these, but I assure you, you probably haven't, because you might have seen other documentaries where they excerpt other parts of the performance, but these don't make it on there. It'll just take a few seconds to set up. And turn the lights down. Okay, we should get there.
Well, that didn't work.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's the best of it.
Track off our Capitol album, and it's called This Boy.
Back in there.
a moment? Quiet, for just... Quiet. Please be quiet, because I know you want to hear what I'm going to say here. These are four of the nicest youngsters we've ever had on our stage. Now, they're making... What I want to tell them is how much we've enjoyed having them. They're going to be on our show once again on Sunday.
Those are pretty brief clips because we have a lot of presentations to fit in. I want to make sure everybody has their time. And I hope this isn't a shameless self-plug, but I've done a program for public libraries where I've done 2 hours of this material. And if anyone's interested, you can email me or approach me. Also, I'll be signing, again, copies of the book in the exhibition hall and selling them at a discount if you're interested. Did you want a time for questions, though?
Sure. Yeah. We can have like maybe 5 minutes for questions for each and then more at the end. Any questions for...
I have a question.
Yeah.
So what sources are you using to get all of this stuff that we haven't seen?
Yeah. That's the question I'm asked most often at these events. And since we're all among friends, I can be a little franker than I usually am, say at the San Francisco Public Library. All this material that I write about in this 400-page book is available on bootlegs, which I've purchased since 1970. The second album I ever got, not the second bootleg album, but the second album I ever got was a Beatles bootleg album of their Let It Be sessions when I was 8 years old. And if you knew where to look and you were in a big city such as San Francisco or Philadelphia, where I grew up, you could find the stores that would sell this material. It took a long time to accumulate, but it's all out there quite literally right now, because on the internet you can find these files. Maybe it's not the best sound quality. You can find these files if you know where to look. And if you don't know where to look, just ask your kids and they'll let you know how to do it. Blue shirt, yes.
I was curious if you have a sense of how much may not be documented in your book, how much is still out there that you think still needs to be documented?
Huh. There's a lot in the Abbey Road vaults that only one guy outside the Beatles circle named Mark Lewisohn has heard. He did a book called The Beatles Recording Sessions 20 years ago, which is really good. I would recommend it for anybody seriously interested in the Beatles. He was able to once hear all the tapes in the vault and the back they went in the vault. Whether more of it becomes accessible or not really depends on Paul McCartney and Ringo, the surviving Beatles, and the estates of George Harrison and John Lennon. And they have a hard time agreeing on anything, it seems, because there are millions of dollars at stake every time this comes out. I think Paul McCartney particularly is very protective. He doesn't want what he views as maybe subpar recordings coming out and tarnishing the Beatles' main legacy. I think at this point, they don't tarnish the Beatles' main legacy. The songs that we heard to begin, I don't think that even though you wouldn't put them on the same level as the Beatles' primary recordings, they're very illuminating and fun to hear. I think they should be made available. Oh, and I forgot to mention, the sources of those two clips we saw, just to clarify, the first clip of them doing This Boy was their first American concert in Washington, D.C. And it's amazing how well they're harmonizing, considering there's 8,000 screaming teenagers and the amps they're using are worse than average garage band's amps today. The second clip was from the Ed Sullivan Show, but that was a dress rehearsal that was not broadcast from Miami. Again, with this video material, I'm sure it exists in better quality than the somewhat ragged copies that I and other collectors have been able to obtain. It would be great to have an intelligently packaged, officially available compilation of this kind of material. Yes?
Just a logistical question. How long are you going to be next door today?
Kevin?
Since I'm just driving, we'll be there until all the books are gone.
We should be there until at least 4:15, though, seriously, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think someone else, yes.
Has any video turned up with Pete Best or possibly Stuart Sutcliffe?
The only video of Pete Best, of the Beatles when Pete Best was the drummer, I should say, there's like 15 seconds, 20 seconds of silent color footage, probably from early 62, and you can't even see Pete Best. That's the only thing, unfortunately. And there's nothing with Stuart Sutcliffe. Stuart Sutcliffe, by the way, he's the original Beatles bass player who was in the band from 60 to about mid-61, played with him in Hamburg, and he left the band. He wasn't a very good bass player. In fact, he was pretty inept from most accounts. He died in early 62 of a brain hemorrhage before the Beatles became famous. And there is an unreleased recording of him with the Beatles from 1960 when they're rehearsing at home. And the Beatles sound terrible for most of it, which is interesting in and of itself that they would improve so rapidly. Stuart Sutcliffe in particular sounds pretty bad. It kind of validates that legend. I think I have time for one more question.
I was just curious about the Decca session. Is that the same session where they recorded Besame Mucho?
Yeah, exactly. There are a few songs on the Anthology 1 officially available CD. I think there are five. And there are two Lennon McCartney songs on that anthology, Hello Little Girl and Like Dreamers Do. But for some reason, they didn't put the third Lennon McCartney song from that session, Love of the Love, which is the one I played for you at the very beginning. I think I should make room for our other presenters. Thank you very much.